Accession number 1495, reel 3.
Mr. Jones, reel 2.
Reel 3.
The landing was a bit of a shambles because the transport landed before the fighting troops who'd been sent to another beach, but eventually got all sorted out and we were able to rendezvous safely right on the beach at Salerno. And we found that the situation wasn't very good. The infantry divisions had landed, but the Germans had attacked and forced a breakthrough. But so our infantry and the tanks of the 22nd Armored Brigade did an attack, and eventually the Germans were pushed back. And within a few days, we were able to enter the town of Salerno itself and make our way towards Naples.
Did you see much fighting in the days you were in the Salerno beachhead?
No, I didn't see a lot myself. There had been some tanks, some German tanks had broken through and done some damage to the infantry of the 46th Division, but as soon as our battalion landed, the Germans and the tanks had landed with us, the Germans decided to retreat northwards.
Did you see any Italian civilians in the beachhead?
No, but later on we came across them. They did not move or run away or leave their homes. They stayed in their abodes, which was in some respects a good thing.
What kind of terrain was it that you were in?
Very, very mountainous. Italy is not an ideal country for an armoured division because it's all mountains and all rivers to be crossed. As soon as you crossed one river, there's another one a few miles up the road to be crossed. And it's really a poor country for armoured divisions. But we stayed in Italy. We only stayed in Italy for about 4 or 5 months. And we had experience of what it was like to be back amongst civilization again. And our troops had forced river crossings, they forced a crossing of the Volturno River, and we got up as far as the Garigliano, which isn't far from Cassino, when we were told that we were going back to Britain for the to form part of the invasion force.
Had your unit done much fighting in that advance?
Well, we in the space of 4 months, we'd done what was necessary. The infantry, it was mainly we were with the tanks and the tanks and the infantry combined had driven the enemy out of these positions. Of course, he was retreating, so sometimes when you're retreating, you. You have quite a battle, and other times you don't have nothing at all.
What was your reaction when you heard that you were being withdrawn to Northwest Europe?
Well, mixed, really, because there were people who thought that, particularly in the tank regiments. Who'd been out in the Middle East longer than we had. Some of the tank people thought that it's time somebody else had a go, and they're asking questions about what about these people who are in England, have been in England for since 1939? Why don't they do something? But of course, people were glad to be able to go home.
How was the transfer accomplished?
Well, we had to stay in we stayed in Naples until a transport was available to take us back to the United Kingdom, and on a boat at the end of December we embarked on a Dutch ship which took us back via Algiers, Oran, Gibraltar, and right out into the Atlantic, around the north of Ireland, into Glasgow, Gorok. And of course, at that time of the year, the sea is very rough. And we landed in Gorok and were sent to Norfolk for training. And then after a few days, we all had a week's leave. And we continued training in Norfolk for the future invasion of Europe.
What did the preparations for the invasion consist of, as far as you were concerned?
Well, at that time, I'd been transferred to the orderly room. And I was learning the orderly room job because the person who was holding the orderly room sergeant job was going to be posted elsewhere. But it didn't take place. But I didn't really get the job until some time afterwards. But the troops in the unit were training for activities in Northwest Europe, and there were a number of schemes, exercises, which Montgomery was always likely to carry out, and these took place in England up until June 1944. We had lots of visits from different people, like Montgomery and the King and various other people. But we didn't come across any of the Americans there. They were apparently in the West Country.
What kind of effect on morale did these VIP visits have?
Well, we in our unit were a bit bored with them because we'd had so many before, because we had some in the Middle East. The King had come out to North Africa, and he'd seen us before we went to North Africa. Eventually it got a bit we got a bit blasé about them.
What did you think personally of Montgomery?
Well, we thought the troops and the officers in the fighting units thought he was good because he looked after them. But I believe some of the officers didn't like him. But we'd seen what he was like when we'd served under him in Southeast England in 1940-41. He was a bit of a live wire, and he liked his training, and I think what he did for the army in as much as he trained it, and what happened afterwards, we all owe him a great debt.
In what way do you think he looked after the troops?
Well, he didn't send us into any battles where we were going to lose a lot of, there were going to be a lot of casualties. I think he realised, he didn't want, I don't think he wanted to see things which had happened in, which had happened to him in the First World War.
Did you personally see him at close quarters?
Yes, when he inspected us in 1940, was the first, 1940-41, I think it was. We'd seen him at close quarters, and afterwards we'd seen him come along the road in his vehicle. Saw him once with Churchill. This was much later on when we were crossing the Rhine.
Did he ever hand out things to the troops?
So they say. I believe that I didn't see any myself, but he didn't smoke or drink, but he used to hand out cigarettes to the troops.
Now, you coming back, you were in Norfolk preparing for D-Day. Can you take me through the actual process of embarkation and crossing the Channel, please?
Well, we first thing that happened was that we left our billets in Norfolk and were sent to a camp somewhere in Essex. Around about the beginning of June, the camp was sealed. No one was allowed in or out. We were all confined to barracks, and anybody who wasn't, who broke that rule, was dealt with severely. And some people did break it, but they weren't sent to the glasshouse or anything like that. They were deprived of so many days' pay, which meant that they, whatever happened, they'd go across the channel. Anyway, we were sent to this. To this camp in Essex, which round about the beginning of June was sealed, and then about the 4th of June, we embarked. We embarked on these ships. And were taken out to Normandy. Now, one's got to realise that there are different ways of landing on the shores of Normandy. All vehicles were waterproofed so that they could drive into the sea up to a depth of 4 or 5 feet, and still drive up the beach without the water getting into the engine. The exhaust and all the rest of it was waterproofed. The troops in the rifle companies went on. They got on a large ship. And when they got out to off the beaches of Normandy, they were put on landing craft infantry, which drive up to the beach and the front folds down, and they can walk into the water and land. Now, but if you were in a vehicle, you were on a landing craft LCT, a landing craft tank. Now, this is a ship which can hold about 5 or 6 vehicles, and it drives up to the beach, and you let the front down, and you drive off up the beach. And I was in a landing craft tank with so many other vehicles. That's what happened. We drove up to the beach, let the front down, and we drove off. We did not get our feet wet, but the people in the rifle companies did get their feet wet, and they marched on shore where we assembled and rendezvoused and made for our first objective. Incidentally, we were the follow-up division. We were not the assaulting division. we I think it was the 50th division, and it was in front of us, the assaulting division, and we followed them up, and we rendezvoused in a place in somewhere near Bayeux, and waited for all these various vehicles to join up with the fighting troops.
Which beach had you landed on?
I can't remember now what it was. It was the one the 50 div was on, whatever that was.
That was Gold, I think.
Gold, yeah, that would be it.
What did you see on the beach?
Well, there were a number of vehicles which had been hit by shell fire or something or other, or mines, I don't know. There weren't any bodies lying about, because we landed on D+2. We didn't land on D-Day. We were a follow-up division, battalion. Nearly all the civilian houses which were around on the beach, of course, were flat. Everything was flattened.
So you said you concentrated at Bayeux?
Well, somewhere near Bayeux, not actually in the town. It'd always be outside it somewhere. After we'd landed and reassembled, and we'd got together all the vehicles and the things that were necessary for us, we were sent forward and took up a position opposite the enemy. But we were an armoured division, but you couldn't actually work as an armoured division because of the nature of the country. It was all bocage. This country was, there was nothing like it in England. There were fields about 400 yards square, and at one end would be a hedge, a very high hedge. And what happened was the Germans used to get in the lane behind the hedge and dig in and have a marvellous position. And this was bad for the tanks, and the tanks wouldn't work without the infantry were with them. So we didn't get very far very quickly. We took up a position opposite the enemy, and nothing happened much for about a week. Well, then someone had found a way through the enemy lines, and the division said it were going to act as an armoured division, and the tank people found an opening somewhere, and they went further south. Quite a long distance, really, for those days, and came to a place called Villers Bocage, where they met some German tanks, and there was a bit of a big tank battle there, and there was also the infantry. All the infantry battalions were attacked by Germans, who were coming up, first class units were coming up from the south towards the perimeter, and we managed to fight them off, and the line got static for quite some time then.
What were you personally doing at Villers Bocage?
Well, I was at battalion headquarters, but we were all standing, everyone was standing too, as they say. In other words, everybody, irrespective of what his job is, was taking up a defensive position in case the enemy infiltrated round the flanks, We had all round defence, and we were all taken up at a defensive position, but down their quarters, even watching our rear, because we'd advanced, and there were no supporting troops on either on our left or right, which meant that we were out on a limb, as they say. We all took up a defence jack, whether he was a cook, a clerk, or a signaller, or a batman.
What kind of news was coming in to Battalion HQ about the battle?
Well, it wasn't good. We were being attacked on all sides, and people were worried about, as usual, about their flank, which was a good thing, really, because it showed we were, you know. Our years of experience now was helping us. We were much better than what we were in 1940. At that time, it did get a bit desperate because the artillery were firing in some positions over open sights, which means that the enemy is not very far away. But eventually, we were able to fight them off and retreat back into the perimeter. But we had we'd learned a few lessons.
Did you at that time know anything much about the German capability with tanks and any star performers?
We knew from the desert that the German tanks were excellent. The Mark IV, and come across in Tunisia, we come across some Mark VI's Tigers. What he had in Normandy, we didn't really know. But apparently, the tanks that did the damage to the County of London Yeomanry in Villers Bocage were Tiger tanks, and they were being used by some troops who'd been brought from Russia. Not very many, but troops with great experience of Russia had been brought to the Normandy Bridge by Hitler to fight there. And this man, Michael Whitman, had done all the damage.
Did you know about him then?
No. We'd learnt about it afterwards, a long time afterwards. But this had a big effect upon the tank regiments, because what had happened to the tank regiments was this. When we were in North Africa and in Italy, the tank people that had Sherman tanks, which were of an American origin, and they were quite effective. But when we came back to England, we had to leave all our tanks in Italy, and they gave us some English tanks called a Cromwell. And in the opinion of the tank people, the Cromwells weren't as good as the Shermans, and they said none of them were as good as the German Mark V's and Mark VI's.
What happened after Villers Bocage to you?
Well, we were in this perimeter for a long time. All sorts of battles took place, initiated by Montgomery against the Germans. None of them were really successful because no one forced a breakthrough. Montgomery's been criticised for this, but what people seem to overlook is the fact that on the British front, all the troops there were SS and Panzer, and by some means or other, Hitler had decided that that the British front, British Canadian front, was the most important, and he'd put all his best troops, which he'd brought from Russia, he put them all on that front, and they could, and despite attacks by all sorts of British units, Guards Armoured Division and the 11th Armoured and the 7th Armoured, we could never, we could not make these people retreat. They were well equipped. They had excellent anti-tank guns. They knew how to use them. It's true that they did not have, command of the air like we did. But even that didn't seem to bother them. As a matter of fact, one of the things that was very interesting about Normandy was the fact that they were able to bring in Bomber Command. They had a tactical air force, which was an excellent air force, rocket fire and typhoons, but they wanted to bring Bomber Command into it. And what they did was they got Bomber Command to come over and drop some bombs on the German positions around Caen, and which they did. But after it was all over, the Germans were still there, and Bomber Command was not really, it's not really effective because they had a. They weren't very accurate in their bombing.
When did the breakout come for you?
In August 1944. Of course, the breakout was as a result of the Americans breaking out on their front. And the breakout came in 1944, August. And by the beginning of September, we were able to perform like an armoured division, and we raced across France and finished up at Ghent in Belgium.
Did you come across French civilians much?
Yes, they were after Normandy. They were called the Maquis, the Maquis. They tried to help all the British and the American troops by pointing out where the Germans were and what was happening. And we received some help from them.
Did you come across any French who were not friendly to the Allies?
No.
What happened to you in Ghent?
Well, we took the place, but the Germans were in a position north of Ghent, in actual fact, I think they were using what happened was that after Normandy, they used the coast road as an escape route, and we pushed them out of Ghent, but they were still north of the town. Making their way towards Holland.
Did your unit liberate Ghent?
Yes.
What was the liberation of Ghent like?
Not very good. In most of the places we were treated like heroes. We were well treated in all the places, especially in Ghent. As a matter of fact, some people go back there year after year.
What exactly did the populace do?